A couple of weeks ago, a client of mine said to me, "I know I need to relax to heal, but I can't relax. Literally, I can't sit still. If I do, I feel like I'm going to jump out of my skin." When he said this, I realized that he was not the only client who had told me this before. Many of my clients feel that relaxing is very difficult, all for different reasons and different life stages. Maybe you relate to this and you're a mom with too many things to do, or you're a business owner with an endless list of tasks to complete, or you're a teacher and father who juggles taking his kids to school and showing up to work without forgetting to eat breakfast. When you take a moment to sit still, relax, or do nothing, it's uncomfortable. Your body wants to get up and move. Basically, you don't feel relaxed when you're quote-unquote relaxing. What is this? Is this a curse, a blessing? Is it bad or good? And more importantly, if you're experiencing this, how do you relax? Today, I'm going to dive into two paradigms to help you explore the nature of relaxing and five hacks to help you relax with greater ease, no matter your stage of life. Hey friend, welcome to the Better Belly Podcast. If you're currently trying endless supplements, doctor visits, and diet changes to heal your mystery symptoms, you are in the right place. We're here to solve the real root causes behind your gut, hormones, skin, sleep, and brain concerns, literally anything and everything in your body. My name is Allison Jordan. I'm a functional medicine practitioner that has supported over 150 clients just like you to heal problems that no one has been able to fix. You don't need a perfect diet or a random supplement you found on Instagram to heal. You need a proven system that heals your whole body from the inside out. That's what I'm here to share with you, episode by episode. It's time to make health easy again. And just as a reminder, this information is not meant to diagnose, manage, or treat disease. Always consult with your own health practitioner before you make any changes to your health. All right, want to give you guys a couple of heads up before we get started today. Number one, today's episode might be a little bit longer, which you probably already see when you see the actual length of the recording, but just wanted to acknowledge I'm going to try and cover broadly some really big topics in a way that hopefully you've never heard of before, or in a way that makes things click in a really big picture way. And so I didn't feel like I wanted to break up today's podcast into, you know, multiple episodes, but I really did push it all together, and I hope that this helps. So do listen to this podcast in multiple chunks if you need to. The second thing is that there are a lot of links today, and don't worry about writing them down or doing anything crazy. I have them all in the show notes. And so if you're wanting to know where was that link that I shared for a certain book or for a certain, you know, test you can do online, I'm going to have them all in the show notes. It's literally going to be your goodie bag of an episode today. So I really am excited to talk about this because while I am not a psychologist and I'm definitely not claiming to try to be doing anything about therapy or any of that today, I do know a lot about what I'm going to share about on having difficulty relaxing and everything that comes with that, because it's something that I have gone through and I've had to walk through ever since I was really in middle school. I can remember this being a really big problem in middle school, feeling like I just could not relax. And it led to a lot of problems with things like escapism, where I would play video games or read a book or watch TV just to get out of my tension of my mind, but it wasn't truly relaxing. And it was more just like trying to numb out. And maybe that's something that you identify with as you hear me share that. Numbing out can look really different in different ways. It can look like working out a lot. It can look like eating when you actually aren't hungry. But there's different ways that we try to do that. And they are all just signs of our bodies crying out, please help me. And so just to say, I don't have this all figured out, but I know that I'm in a better place than I was 10 or 20 years ago because of the things I'm going to share today. So there are two major things that I see going on in my life and in my clients' lives when they have this problem of I cannot relax, even when I have time to relax or try to relax. You try to sit down and you just feel like you have to get up and go and do something, or you're brain keeps thinking about all the things that maybe, you know, eventually have to be done, but just relaxation state is not happening, whether you're at a spa or just trying to sit down to read a book on your couch or drinking a cup of tea. It is not happening. There are two factors that I see, and one I would call natural and healthy, and one I would call still natural, but born out of a place where there's something bad has happened. There's something negative behind that. We're going to use the word trauma. So the first thing I want to go over is the natural, healthy, like, part that can actually make it difficult to calm down. And this is personality. Woohoo, personality. There is all sorts of stuff out there, like what personality tests are actually true and good. And if you're really into stuff like that, this episode might frustrate you a little, because I am going to recommend personality tests and personality typing, because all they do is they give us language to articulate what goes on inside our bodies, even if they're not, I don't know, scientific. Which, if you are listening to this and you don't know what I mean, like, what, how do you scientifically process a personality? It's basically, something is scientific if it's predictable and duplicatable, meaning, you know, if XYZ factors come in, this will happen. So if you drop a ball, gravity has a predictable outcome of how fast the ball is going to drop at. And you need to factor some things like resistance from wind, the friction that gets built up, all that, but that's all science. And so you can use certain measures to know if I drop a ball that's this shape and this weight, it's going to fall at this pace and it's going to take it this many seconds to hit the ground. Basically, when scientists are trying to do that with personality, it's really difficult to say what determines someone's personality, does it change, etc. At the same time, it doesn't have to be scientific for it to be helpful, right? So we're just looking for the utility of this. And over my life, starting in middle school, my family got exposed to personality tests by counselors that we were working with at the time. My family had a lot of dysfunction going on in it that we were actively trying to address: anger problems, anxiety, crying. And we knew that there was some diagnoses in my family, like autism and ADHD, but we were really trying to explore getting healthier as a family, both individuals getting healthier, but honestly, all of us interacting together. And so we were seeing lots of different types of counselors. It was a really interesting time in life. And I was in sixth or seventh grade when one of our counselors started giving us different personality tests to explore. And the very first one that I really clearly remember was the Myers-Briggs personality test. The Myers-Briggs test is a test where you have four different letters that you're evaluating, and you have one of two letters that you'll be for each one. So there's, I guess, technically eight total letters, but at the end of the day, you'll be like, I'm an INTJ, and it stands for introvert, intuitive, thinker, judger. And to best understand the test, you really want to understand what each of those letters stand for. But if you really don't want to do the deep dive, like, I really enjoy that, and I can actually meet someone and be able to guess fairly accurately what their Myers-Briggs is by observing them, because you can see, are they an introvert or extrovert based on, you know, what the Myers-Briggs description of introvert and extrovert is, which isn't always what people think it is. Or are they an intuitive, or are they sensing? And what do those two words mean? And how do they impact that person? And how can they live in a way that is the least stressful to them? And what happens when you have a personality, there's different personalities that are more prone to, say, being more comfortable, essentially relaxing or doing relaxing things like going to a beach or observing, you know, a beautiful, just looking at the clouds in the sky. And there's some personalities that tend to be more driven, and they will be great leaders, but they might have a hard time not being in sort of an executive functioning state. And that just gives you a lot of self-compassion when you understand this, of what are the things my personality might have a tendency towards, and not just kind of being irritated with yourself, like, you can't relax, but saying, sometimes you can even hack your way into relaxing, of saying, well, my personality really craves XYZ thing. And if I fulfill those things first, then I can get into a relaxation stage. In a state of health, everyone can definitely get to a point where they are not trying to do and accomplish and achieve, but they're able to finally rest and relax. And so I have a link that I'm going to share with you guys to my favorite Myers-Briggs test. It's on the personalitypage.com, but I have the direct link to the actual place where you would buy the test access code. You do have to buy it. It's $7 if you buy one test, meaning just one test for you. But say if you want, you know, if you got kids or a spouse, you want to take it, parents, you can actually buy multiple tests and they have price points for those too. But $7, it's like a cost of a really nice latte. And you get to learn what it thinks your personality is. And it's super accurate. I have tried other Myers-Briggs test and I do not like how they come out. And I've learned a lot about Myers-Briggs, so I can at this point very much, even without a test, figure out my own personality, others, things like that. I also really like this web pages, the personalitypage.com. I like the content of what the information they have for each type. So say you get, you know, INFP as your personality type, they have a really great description page of like, what does a portrait of an INFP look like? And they even have additional stuff like INFPs in careers, INFPs in relationships, INFPs, how they grow. And so you can see just different things it has to share on places you might thrive, things, situations that might be difficult, partners that might be ideal for you, and it's just fascinating. I haven't looked into it basically in this in depth since middle school, but I still remember the experience of going through it and even just like sitting around with my family and reading each other's Myers-Briggs results and just like laughing to the point of tears of like, this is so accurate. So if you've never done any personality test, I really highly recommend starting here. Maybe I'm biased because I've started here, but I always found it was a really great complement to any other personality test that I learned after this. So that's the first one that I recommend. Another one that I recommend is StrengthsFinder. StrengthsFinder is a test where there's 34 strengths, but when you do the test, they only show you your top five. And the whole point of it is that we thrive the most as human beings, not when we are functioning out of our weaknesses, but when we're functioning out of our strengths. And unfortunately, society has built us where we kind of expect to only work on our strengths. Like if you are in school and you're getting A in math, but a D in English, well, your parents and your teachers are going to say, spend more time doing English. And yes, while we want you to have like a baseline skill level in English, what StrengthsFinder says is more true when you look at how well someone can thrive and produce and be a part of a team and enjoy their career. All of that has to do with how much they're actually living in their strengths, not trying to like fix their weaknesses. And so when you do the test, they only give you your top five strengths. And what I recommend if you do this test, and I have a link for it, it is, by the way, the most expensive test of the ones I list. It just has a lot of research and data behind it, which is why it's so expensive. It was done with a huge amount of data by a corporation and researchers, and it's actually really amazing, but it is the most expensive test. But if you do this test, what I recommend is I want you to look at your strengths. They'll give you information on what these mean and how they apply. And then I want you to think about your life and ask yourself, is the way that your life and job, if like whatever your job is, however you spend your time and work, however that's currently structured, is it structured in a way where you get to live out each of your five strengths? So let's say you have the woo strength, which means winning others over. It's typically kind of like a classic extrovert, likes to meet people, chat them up type thing. Well, if you are a stay-at-home mom right now and you don't have a lot of community you're interacting with, and maybe you're staying at home, literally you're not like, there's just, it's hard to have interactions with other people, but you have the woo strength, you're gonna, that like learning that would be really helpful for you to really hone in and focus on how do I get a little bit more time in my day or in my week where I get to exercise that strength, because it will fill you up, right? It's going to fill you up. Living in your strengths makes your life easier and gives you energy rather than takes away energy. Similarly, you might have kind of the opposite strength of a woo, which I'm blanking what it's called right now. But it's relator. And relators, instead of liking to know lots and lots and lots of people, relators like to know, you know, 5 to 10 people super deep. And they like to connect with those people more frequently. They like to be with them, and they tend to get overwhelmed when there's a lot of new people they're constantly meeting. So you could ask yourself, am I able to connect with, you know, oh, I'm a relator. Who are my 5 to 10 people that I'm always trying to connect with? Usually family is first, but not always. You know, if you have a spouse and a kid, they might be in your immediately in that kind of relator group. But whoever those people are, maybe one of them moved, or maybe you lost some of your relator, like key group because of, I don't know, graduating from college, whatever it was. And that could also really throw off your energy levels and, of course, make it hard to relax because you just feel starved emotionally on the inside. So that is Strengths Finder. And then the last one that I wanted to highlight is the Enneagram. Now, the Enneagram is a test. I actually don't recommend doing a test for the Enneagram, because the Enneagram is based off of this concept that there's 9 types, and every type has a basic fear and a basic desire. And it's those basic fears and basic desires that then are what drives them to act. And interestingly enough, you could have an Enneagram 3 and an Enneagram 1, which is what I am. They can look really similar, like how we behave, how clean we are, how perfectionistic we are, or how driven we are to achieve in our jobs, or whatever, how creative we are. There can be a lot of similarity in how someone looks on the outside, but it's how they feel on the inside and what the feelings are that are driving their actions. Are they trying to be perfect because, you know, the Enneagram 1, which is what I am, they have like a basic fear of being wrong or being bad, and they have a basic desire to be good. And when I read this, it was immediately obvious I am an Enneagram 1. And then I was able to learn more as I read more about the Enneagram type 1. And that gave me a lot of insight into myself. So what I recommend, since they do offer tests out there, but I find the tests are, it's really hard to get at someone's like basic fears and basic desires. They tend to be more behavior driven, like, do you do this thing? But the thing is, again, multiple types might do one thing, like try to have a clean desk or whatever the things, types of questions they're asking, be really have trouble with anger, things like that. There's multiple Enneagrams that can struggle with anger as a problem. So Enneagram 2, for example, their basic fear is of being unwanted or unworthy of being loved, and their basic desire is to feel loved, and then it manifests in certain behaviors. And there's nothing wrong with having these basic fears or basic desires. It's just motivating these people differently. I identify a lot less with the Enneagram type 2. And so to me, I'm like, oh yeah, that's not driving me. I mean, I do want to be loved, but when an Enneagram 2 reads this, like, they just know it feels very different. So there can be some confusion for people. I've actually took a class on the Enneagram by Susan Stabile. It was a live class where I had a moderator who'd actually been trained in Susan Stabile's methodology. But when I took that course, it was really interesting how some people came in thinking they were one Enneagram and they left realizing they were a different type, but that there were different like masking things they were doing that made them think they were a different type, because sometimes like kids will try to mirror their parents' type because they think it's better or whatever is going on. Or they'll do the opposite type of, say you had a parent growing up who behaved in certain ways that you didn't like, and you try to do the opposite of them. You'll kind of look like a certain type because you're trying to force yourself into it. So there can be a lot of self-learning. I really do recommend Susan Stabile's the educator on the Enneagram that I know the best. I really love her stuff. She's this gentle, white-haired lady. So sweet. She has a podcast, which is where I've heard her the most outside of her course. And I really like the podcast. There's also books, not just by her, but by many, many other people. So I just check out books and podcasts have been my favorite way. But I do have a specific place that I recommend if you're going to go read the basic fears and desires, which is the enneagraminstitute.com. And I'm just going to put a link in the show notes so you can go directly to it. And the last thing I want to mention on personalities before we move on to the trauma, essentially, and how that can impact our ability to relax or not relax, is not quite your personality, but your personality and life experiences and who you are right now mixed with your spouse if you are married or engaged. So there is a phenomenal test called SYMBIS. It's an acronym, S-Y-M-B-I-S. It stands for Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, and you can totally take this after you're married too, but it evaluates things like how you versus your partner prefer to handle money, your fighting types or conflict types, how you perceive or think of your love life, your actual personalities, your talking styles, like how much you talk or how frequently, how much you want to talk or what your expectations are, deepest longings, and they compare them. And my husband and I actually did the SYMBIS test before we got married, and we felt really confirmed that we understood each other because most of what was revealed by the test, we felt like we were not surprised by and had already talked about, which just showed that we had a lot of self-awareness. But if this whole topic is new to you and you have a partner, even if you don't feel like you actively have conflict with them, the point is that you can always grow deeper, and being able to learn new ways to communicate this is phenomenal. So I'm going to just have a link to SYMBIS. If I remember correctly, I think to take the test, I think you have to get partnered with a mentor, but they do it in a really seamless way on their website. So I wouldn't be too worried about it. But if you're interested in that, and especially if you feel like your marriage is a source of tension right now, then this would be something I think is a great tool to start to dig into that and try to get on the same page, not like just blame the other person or villainize one or the other persons as like, I'm the bad guy, you're the good guy, whatever. But to understand each other better, and that gives you the capacity for compassion. And that is so much more healing for both of you. So, one thing I had written here as a reminder, if you have never done any of these tests before, do not think you need to catch up on all of them right now before you can have healing. You are not behind. This is just an invitation. If you've never done any of these, I do recommend just pick one. Pick one that sounded most interesting to you, that you had curiosity about, and make it a educative learning experience. And I think that you're going to be surprised by what you learn about yourself. And even just the catharsis of reading sentences that are like, this is so like me, and I've never even been able to articulate it this well, and I really feel known and understood and validated. Super helpful. All right, so that's personality. And personality can make it really hard to relax. I kind of don't want to get into the details because then we start getting into certain Myers-Briggs, what specific types have a hard time relaxing, or same with Enneagram, or under what circumstances. There's definitely just a lot going on there. So I'm going to let you guys dive into that. And it is a real thing. And I know all of my personalities that show up on those lead me to be very anal and not able to relax. But something that's going to take, maybe whether your personality is prone to having difficulty relaxing or your personality actually is pretty okay with relaxing, one thing that can throw both of those off or make everything worse is trauma. And so if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm about to pause, please don't pause. If you don't feel like you have trauma, or this conversation is not about you because you've never been, you know, think of the big abuses, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. Maybe you either know you haven't gone through any of those, or you're not sure, but you're pretty sure you didn't. I want to actually redefine trauma for you based off of what trauma specialists are describing, how they're describing it, and rethink about, you know, if you think you have trauma or not. So trauma is not what happened to us, but what happens inside us, right? So trauma is not what happens to us, it's what happens inside us. So a really great example that was given when I heard this quote was, a kid raises her hand in class. And when she, like, imagine a little elementary school girl or boy raising their hand in class and then not being picked to answer the question. The teacher picks somebody else. So one kid this happens to might be like, whatever, I didn't get it. I didn't get picked. But another kid, for different reasons, if they don't get picked, this could actually be deeply wounding to them. And they start having thoughts like, teacher doesn't like me. I've been rejected. There's fear. There's shame. There's a lot of reasons why what happens inside us varies person to person. Personalities involved, previous traumas are involved, family, household life is involved, stress, if they have ADHD, which I know ADHD, they can be really sensitive to rejection, things like this. When that trauma happens, it then teaches our body to be on alert. It basically says you need to be vigilant because things like this could happen to you at any time, or you need to be vigilant so that these things don't happen to you again, so that the next time you raise your hand, you get called on, or don't raise your hand at all, hide in a corner and kind of feel afraid all the time and don't put yourself out there as a way to be safe, but you also kind of feel frigid and stuck where you're at. And so again, it's usually not going to be one of these things, but it's going to be, especially if it's on this level of raising your hand and not being called on, usually it's going to be, that's a smaller trauma in terms of, it's usually going to feel bigger the more it happens. So by the time we are 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, we have accumulated certain experiences that it's almost like having a bruise where normally touching a part of your body is fine. But if someone touches the area with a deep enough bruise at the same pressure as everywhere else, it actually might really hurt. And trauma can do that, where if you've had certain experiences with a spouse or with a parent or with teachers or people in your just kind of community growing up, then if you have a somewhat similar, it doesn't have to be even the same, but just something that gives you the same feelings, again, you'll have a really big reaction. And that's kind of what the whole point of, not the whole point, but one of the big points of counseling is identifying what those hurt areas are and healing them, because trauma is like a wound that is not healing. And there are things, different things you can do to help heal that. It's not all about just like talk about it and it'll go away. And with that, I actually have at the end of this episode, a bunch of recommendations on different therapies that are not just talking that you can try out that are super helpful for trauma. Again, even if you're not like, I had a horrible, you know, I was physically abused. Those things happen. And if that's true for you, I don't mean to make it sound light, but I also happen to be in the category of people who feel like nothing huge has happened. But when I look back on my life, I'm like, oh my gosh, I definitely was very stressed at certain points in my life with my family and stuff going on. And so that I'm like, I it's more helpful for me to identify as someone who's experienced trauma. And the truth is really pretty much all of us have experienced it. But have we gone through the healing process? A lot of times a really healthy parent can do that for us. If when something really hard happens to us, they can walk us through the steps of being able to actually walk past the, like walk out of what happened to us, not to say it didn't happen or that it wasn't painful, but so that we don't feel stuck. Our psyche isn't essentially stuck in that moment in time and not moving forward. It's that not moving forward that makes it continually hurt and continually leave us with that feeling of needing to be vigilant. And that's how trauma really impacts a difficulty relaxing. So at the beginning of this episode, I promised that I was going to give 5 tips to regulate your nervous system, and I'm going to quickly give them right here now that you kind of have all that backstory and context. So tip number one is take a personality test, and I'm going to be putting all the links in a row in my show notes for the Myers-Briggs test, the StrengthsFinder test, reading your Enneagram types, and doing the Symbis evaluation if you want to do that. Number two is going to be read a book, not just any book, but specifically some books that I have found helpful on this topic of relaxation and trauma and knowing yourself and self-compassion. They're all sort of different topics, but they blend together. The first 4 that stuck out to me were, number 1, The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. Number 2, Tired of Trying, How to Hold On to God When You're Frustrated, Fed Up, and Feeling Forgotten by Ashley Morgan Jackson. And I read that in the last year, and it was really great. Unexpected, Finding Resilience Through Functional Medicine, Science, and Faith by Dr. Jill Carnahan. Also read that in the last year. and really great book by an MD doctor who went through breast cancer, being diagnosed with Crohn's disease, mold illness, and Lyme illness. And she has written about every single stage, has both practical recommendations, but it's written much more like an autobiography. And then she has just really heartfelt stuff in there. So if you're going through it, through the ringer with your health, it's a phenomenal book. And then lastly, Redeeming Heartache by Dan B. Allender. Dr. Allender is a psychologist who runs the Allender Center, or founded the Allender Center, and he's written a lot of books. And I recently read Redeeming Heartache, which he co-wrote in the midst of COVID, like 2020 happening. So both interesting read if you felt like 2020 and generally COVID was traumatizing, because he actively is talking about it being traumatic to him and his team members during that time period. But then in general, it's about the problem of suffering and hard things we go through and how to process them and not like, again, not say, oh, that didn't happen or it wasn't a big deal, but like acknowledge it, but also not be completely frozen or paralyzed by suffering and problems in our life. Number three is try a new therapy. And by therapy, I mean more like psychological therapy. So a couple of my favorites that are just a little outside the box that most people haven't tried. And again, I mention these because talk therapy can only do so much. It uses the prefrontal cortex and our, like the front of our brain, which is where we do a lot of logic. And it can be a lot harder to get to the limbic system, where typically you're going to have a lot of the trauma impacting things the most. It's the limbic system's the center of processing emotion. And so these therapies that I am about to list are known to be really good at almost directly getting at the limbic system, but also just noting direct doesn't mean talking about it. Direct just means getting past the front of the brain. So EMDR, which is an eye movement therapy. You can find a therapist on Psychology Today, which I'm putting a link into Psychology Today. They have a website that's like so many therapists register on there, and you just search like by specialty, like kids, family, marriage, drug abuse, etc. And you can also search by modality or therapy type, and they have a huge list, and one of them is EMDR. And most of these therapists, like, you'll be able to see, do they work with insurance, which type of insurance can they work with, or if they're cash, what are their fees, and you'll be able to see that right away. Then we have internal family systems, or IFS. You can find a therapist on Psychology Today or the IFS Institute directory, which I have a link to both of those. Internal family systems, I've done it. It's amazing. It basically works at trying to access different parts of your internal psyche but they kind of discovered that people talk about themselves in different, almost like we have different characters or different personalities inside of us. And we have characters who are exiles. We have characters who are protectors. And there's a third one. There might even be a fourth one. I clearly am not an IFS expert, but whatever these characters end up doing inside of you, it's a response to trauma, and you want to be able to work with them and have this basically internal family of all these characters working together well and listening to each other. And it's a phenomenal therapy because it really gets you to be a little bit more creative and open up from just like talking about what actually happened in your life, but trying to interact with these internal relationships that are happening to you on a day-to-day basis, but that you're usually not aware of or see in this particular way. So it's a really unique therapy. I find it super relaxing, or at least like, I don't feel like I have to think so hard. It's a lot more like listening. So instead of trying to figure out my problem, I'm walking through the process of my problem. Somatic therapies, which is moving your body to release things that like experiences, emotions, trauma, feelings. You can find a therapist in Psychology Today for that. Spiritual direction with it, which if you are a Christian, means it is somebody who they're not specifically trying to solve your like childhood problems, but they're trying to help restore and improve your relationship with God, which can be usually when you need this the most. A lot of what's going on is you feel far from God or you feel really lost. You get a lot of, you know, I'm a Christian and I know that sometimes when I've gone through hard things, you'll get people saying just like, just read this Bible verse, just memorize this, just pray more. And you're like, really? And spiritual directors won't do that when they're trained right. I really prefer, really like spiritual directors in done that come out of soulshepherding.org, and they have a whole directory of practitioners you can pick from and work with. And then the last one is called DNRS, Dynamic Neural Retraining System. This is, you go to retrainingthebrain.com by Annie Hopper, and it's basically rewiring your limbic system practice. She has got a book, and then she's got a program, and then she has a self-assessment survey to even be like, do you need this? And I have a direct link on my show notes for the self-assessment survey. Number four. So that was number three of the tips to regulate your nervous system. Number four is join the Better Belly Blueprint. So the Better Belly Blueprint is my program to help you heal your gut and reduce your top five symptoms by 80% in the next 3 to 6 months. That was a lot of numbers there. But you know, maybe you're dealing with anxiety, you're dealing with bloating, you're dealing with painful periods or perimenopause, maybe you're dealing with constipation or diarrhea, or increasing food sensitivities. My program teaches you how to fix these things. And you're like, how does that have to do with regulating the nervous system? Well, potentially you've heard of the concept of the gut-brain connection. And a lot of times things that are actually in the gut are actually causing the anxiety. I have clients who've worked with me who their main complaint was anxiety. And we did the lab testing and we found very specific things that are known to cause anxiety, dealt with them, and their anxiety reduced so much that they were able to get off of medication and reduce how much counseling they were getting. And they thought it was their grad school program stressing them out. They thought it was trying to get their first job out of school. A lot of it was actually for this particular client I'm speaking of. She had a pathogen called C. diff, Clostridia difficile, which, you know, again, if you look this up online, you're going to think that this is no way you, because if you have C. diff in the traditional acute sense, you are going to be so sick, you will need to go to the hospital. But you can actually have chronic low-grade C. diff. And one of the things it does is it blocks the enzyme dopamine beta hydrogenase, DBH, from converting dopamine into norepinephrine. And when that happens, one of the symptoms is anxiety. She had that in her gut. It was giving her loads of anxiety, which is for sure going to make it hard to relax. And so there can be a biochemical component, like biochemical meaning not so much your neurotransmitters and you need like a SSRI, what I just spoke of is a neurotransmitter problem, but it literally a biochemical problem stemming from pathogens that doctors cannot find, stemming from nutritional deficiencies or heavy metals that doctors cannot find. And I hate having to say that, but it's true. The testing you find in hospitals is not designed to find this level of nutritional deficiencies, and even for alternative health practices, they are not designed to heal your body's ability to absorb these nutrients, heal your body's ability to digest. They just give you a bunch of supplements that don't actually heal you. They just kind of like band-aid the problem, which is very expensive and very frustrating because you really won't feel your best until your body can actually regulate its own biochemistry. So your body can regulate its own biochemistry, it also typically can regulate its nervous system significantly better. If you're listening to this and you deal with constipation, I want you to think about how much better you feel emotionally after you finally have a poop. Y'all, poop. So that's number four, join the Better Belly Blueprint. You can join the Better Belly Blueprint at betterbellytherapies.com/blueprint. Or if you're like, what the heck, Allison? How is this thing actually going to heal me? How is this actually different or better than anything else I've tried before? Go check out my training, my free training on the exact steps the Better Belly Blueprint will take you through to help you heal by going to betterbellytherapies.com/training. And I have the links for both of those in the show notes. betterbellytherapies.com/blueprint if you're ready to join now, and betterbellytherapies.com/training if you're like, just tell me more. Why is this so much better? What are the exact steps you take me through? I want to know. Go to betterbellytherapies.com/training. And again, you don't have to do all of these that I just recommended, but do the one that you're like, most drawn to. Do the free assessment or do read a book or join the Better Belly Blueprint if you've been thinking about it. Do not feel like you have to do all of them. But these have been things that I've done almost all of these, and they've been super key in me having a more regulated nervous system. And number five, y'all, take the leap. Take the leap. Resting requires trust, ultimately. Trust that the systems you've set up in your life won't fall apart if you leave them alone. Trust that your kids can live without you for a few hours by hanging out with dad or a neighbor. Trust that your heart won't implode if you sit still, or that you will lose your meaning and your value if you aren't constantly accomplishing anything. So that is it for my review on how to regulate your nervous system, how to relax when you're having trouble relaxing. And the two major factors that I see, one of them is just more self-knowledge and self-awareness, that you can begin to have self-compassion and knowing yourself more, kind of like knowing, I like to eat this type of food, or I tend to get sleepy at this time of day, or I feel the best, have the most energy when I eat at certain times of the day. Like, that's what knowing yourself is like. And you can do that by learning about your personality and also by learning about sources of trauma you've had in life. They're not always so obvious, but they don't have to be for them to be real and impacting you and really helpful and important to address. So I hope you guys love this episode, and I will catch you guys next week. Hey friend, I hope you loved this episode. If you've been a fan for a while or newly loving this podcast, can you do me a favor? Drop into Apple Podcasts and leave me a review. When you leave a review, you do so much. You help me know you're listening. You can tell me what you're loving so I know what to make more of. And you help others by boosting this podcast so other people like you can find the podcast too. I mean, it's a win-win-win, right? So if you want a way to pay it forward, just go to Apple Podcasts or click the link in my show notes and leave a rating and review. And if you want some more free stuff, just head over to my free Facebook group, betterbellytherapies.com/Facebook, and you can get access to all of my free support for you, including some Facebook group exclusive stuff like my podcast episode vault, where you can search the Better Belly podcast by topic and find exactly what you need to expedite your healing. I cannot wait to see you in there. Catch you guys next week.